absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Come to Texas, sir. Long necks and western swing. It's a river walking in a spring. When the colors shine, it's the way that we like to sing. Look the pocket down in green. Enchiladas and a refried bean. With the colors.
Welcome to episode 49 of Absolutely Intercultural. Today I'm in the studio with Agnes Dusch from Budapest, Hungary, and we are going to hear about how international travel opens our eyes and our ears to intercultural differences. In my first interview, we witness an incredible coincidence when an American family of three generations, grandparents, parents, and children, went to New Braunfels in Texas to find out more about their German ancestors. They had brought with them a picture of their ancestors' house. When they showed it to the museum staff, they were in for an astonishing surprise.
Small world.
Well, you found the picture.
Yes.
We
brought this picture in this house.
You're kidding.
This is built by August Learson, who is my great-great-uncle. I'm the fifth generation in this house.
Agnes Dusch spoke to Adelheid Korb about an organization which connects travelers with people in that country, who will act as hosts and introduce the travelers to the country and also often to their own family. It seems incredible in our days that the hosts who have never met you should be so open and even trust you with their keys to the house. This way, traveling will turn into a real pleasure for everyone.
You know what, she said, I'll put the key in the barbecue set outside on the veranda. And I said, what? They don't know us. They've never seen us in their lives. How can they give us the key to their house?
Often when I travel to a new country, I already have an idea of what I want to capture for the next podcast. At least the concept, which I call the Spielidee. On my trip to Texas in January, this idea was all about large open landscapes and the story of the settlers and how this still influences the cultural orientation of lifestyle of the Texans today. However, for the first time, this was all turned around by a most incredible incident in which I was no longer looking for a story, but I had a feeling a story was obviously looking for me. I must warn you, if I saw a documentary where the things which you hear about were shown on a private television channel, I would think that it was all fabricated and false and just made for the camera, because it's very difficult to believe that my little recorder should actually have been ready and switched on while this all happened. I was on a visit to the Immigration Museum, Sophienburg, in Braunfels in Texas. And I was interviewing a family who were trying to find out more about their German ancestors. In fact, their joint genealogical search for their ancestry brought the whole family of three generations together over the Christmas holidays. They had brought along some research from over 20 years, but also two important pictures. One of them, a picture of their great-great-great-great-grandmother in her wedding gown.
This is the wedding gown that Dorothea Kretschmeyer wore when she married Christian Busch in the 1850s.
Okay, and this would be your...
Oh, my goodness. Many times great-grandmother.
And they came in 1845. We knew where they came from, and we knew when they came and on what ship, but we hadn't really gotten into it until 20 years ago. You just kind of, when you're young, take things for granted. And so I got interested and started doing the research and started coming to New Braunfels, because I knew that his family came from New Braunfels and in the areas around here. So that's when I started doing the research, and then I started putting it on computer. And the grandsons became interested, And so that's, we're just here to kind of confirm a lot of the things that we've heard over a period of time.
I don't know, things like Genie and Ancestry.com were really what kind of got me into it. The accessibility, the information that are on that's online with census records and to research, and this is much nicer.
Right, I mean, that's one of the interesting things is to see my kids being interested in. Over the years, we've had a few stories or whatever, but you know, to come down here and actually try to, they're trying to pull something from the archives here from some of our relatives many years ago, so that I've never seen. So, seen pictures, but that's about it.
While I was interviewing the lady and her mother, her husband had taken the photograph of the house and showed it to the director of the museum. Please make an effort and try to listen to what starts in the background while I was trying to interview the ladies. In fact, it turned out that the house in the picture was the very house that the director of the museum lives in nowadays. It's a small world out there, and you can imagine the excitement of the family, but also of the museum staff, when this suddenly came out.
The house that we were looking at was where Christian Busch, our ancestor from Germany, lived. Mm-hmm. In New Braunfels.
That's your house?
What was real interesting to me is that they landed in...
Baby?
Oh, no.
Oh, you've been able
this
to get
is her
this
house.
On tape. Oh, my
God. What a small world.
Well, you found the picture.
Yes.
This
we brought this
I
picture
live.
In this house.
You're kidding. You live there?
This is built by August Learson, who is my great-great-uncle. I'm the fifth generation in this house.
Hilda Conrad and Clara Tate, who lived over on Bridge Street, I would come up here and get them, and they would tell me all kind of stories about, you know, the families.
They told you that this is where Christian lived.
That's right. They told me that's where he lived.
Because my family, my grandfather and parents got the house in the 40s. I mean, this is the only house I've ever lived in my whole life.
In the 1940s?
In the 1940s.
Oh, okay. So that.
And so, but it was built by August Learson, who is my great-great-uncle.
How strange.
No, that's the rock wall. We've restored it.
Yes, it's definitely.
That's the rock wall my husband built and that, and we've added on to it, and that, so.
What a small world.
Very interesting.
Yes, you want to do more
have a story now.
See, I personally know where this house is.
I wish you could have seen the look on her face when I handed her that picture.
I heard you saying, that's your house?
That's my house.
Well, how would we go about finding out?
As you heard for yourself, this incident really falls into the category of absolutely unbelievable. I had the feeling I should switch off the microphone at that point and let the family talk with the director of the museum and her colleagues a little more privately. Having heard about this individual story of immigration from Germany to Texas, I was curious to find out more about the German settlers and their stories at their arrival. The staff of the museum allowed me to walk around through the museum with my little microphone in order to convey a little bit of the atmosphere there. I must say, if you ever come to the region between Austin and San Antonio, this museum and the archives are a real must. I learned that in the 1840s, there was great unrest in the German states because of unemployment and overpopulation, and that this encouraged many Germans to emigrate to America. But in particular to this part of Texas. A society of noblemen was leading this group and helped purchase safe land on which a colony was settled. The group was led by Prince Karl of Solms-Braunfels, which of course explains the name, New Braunfels. By using antique exhibits, reconstructions of the ship, but also photos and sound files, the museum really manages to convey a picture of the old times by demonstrating that, for example, every family, no matter how big or small, was allowed to bring only one trunk on the boat.
During the 1840s, there was great unrest in the German states. This was due to the repression of political freedom, poverty caused by unemployment, heavy taxation, and overpopulation. These difficult conditions encouraged a growing popular dream of a new start in the New World. This dream to emigrate to America, and specifically to Texas, led to a meeting of a small group of German noblemen. These counts and princes met on the Rhine in April of 1842. Karl, Count of Castell, was a guiding force that led to the formation of the Verein zum Schutze Deutscher Einwanderer in Texas, or the Society for the Protection of German Immigrants in Texas. The purpose of the Altersverein, or Society of Noblemen, was to purchase safe land in Texas upon which a colony of German immigrants would be settled. Towards this end, the Altersverein then formed a stock company which raised the equivalent of $80,000 in capital funds. Prince Karl of Solms-Braunfels was selected as the first Commissioner General of the Altersverein, with the unrestricted authority for all its Texas colonization projects. The prince was chosen because he had the reputation of having perseverance, courage, physical endurance, and the confidence to make difficult decisions. On November 29, 1844, the first ship, the John Dethard, arrived at the port of Galveston, Texas, after a two-month voyage. Many other ships would follow. The immigrants were transported to Karlshafen, what is now known as Indianola, in Lavaca Bay. As the immigrants began making their way inland, Prince Karl was signing the deed for the Canal Tract. He purchased acres of land from Rafael C. Garza and his wife, Maria Antonio Veramente Garza, for the sum of $1,111. This was the prince's third attempt to obtain a land grant for the new colony. On March 21st, 1845, the immigrants forded the Guadalupe River. They had arrived at their destination. The settlement, New Braunfels, was named by Prince Karl in honor of his ancestral home in Braunfels, Germany. Prince Karl soon departed for his return trip to Germany. There he would marry Lady Sophie and never return to the colony in Texas that bore his family name.
Now it was time to go back to the family and find out what else had happened to them. You remember that the second photo they had brought along was about a beautiful lady in a wedding dress. And believe it or not, the whole family was now standing around this very dress, which an employee of the museum had found in the archives in the meantime. I asked them how the dress from the 1880s had ended up in the museum and what it was like to witness this direct contact with the past in the circle of your whole family.
We knew that this was a dress that was back in the 1800s, and one of the aunts had given it to me, and she told me that this dress and a gun had been donated to the museum, and we had never seen it, but I had been here once and looked for the dress, but didn't ask anyone to see it. I couldn't find it, but when we came today, they went to the archives and found it for us, so we're thrilled. 1885, October the 21st, 1885, and that's the date of the wedding.
What is this like for your family to go out around Christmas and look at your
Oh, it's ancestors? Very exciting to find ties to the past for our family. Very exciting.
When you're young and you have children growing up and your life is fast, you really don't think a whole lot about your past. You just know that Grandma so-and-so came from such and such, you know. But once you get older, you begin to think about that, and that's the way I got interested. I wanted my kids to know where their ancestors had come from.
It's very heartwarming, I guess, to know that that we keep things and can find them when the time comes and can show them to the people who were kind enough to donate them to us, you know, because that's what the museum is all about, you know, for all of the things that... that are donated. If they didn't donate them, we wouldn't have them to put on exhibit or to have to show. We're glad when the people do that. And when they come like this and are interested in still seeing it, that right. means a lot too, you know, because we're all interested in all the old things. And like she said, so many times we wait until it's too late, till the people who could have told us about some of this are all gone. And then we want to know, then we have to spend lots more time searching it all up.
For me, as an observer, the things I had witnessed were absolutely incredible. The family had come to the museum with two photos, one of a house and one of a wedding. Within 1 hour, They had identified and located the house from the picture and had an invitation to be shown around the house of their ancestors. Also, they had identified the wedding dress, and what is more, it was on the table in front of them in beautiful old silk, preserved and documented since the 1880s. I could not believe that this should be an everyday occurrence in the museum.
Things like this do happen. I mean, we've had situations similar to this, but not involving me. That's what is so fascinating about this, that, you know, they're looking for a house and it's my house. Now, that is just, it's bizarre almost.
Yeah. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit how you will be trying to go on from this now? I mean, I just saw that you invited these guys.
Well, hey, they may be relatives if they lived in my house. You know, I love showing our house. Our house was built in 1852 by my great-great-uncle when he came from Germany. And I am the fifth, my children, the sixth, my grandchildren, the seventh generation. Mm-hmm. Yesterday for Christmas, my family, my brothers and sisters and their families came to the house. And there are even my sister's great-grandchildren now, who would be the eighth generation.
Right.
To, not that they will live in the house, but yet they're passing through the house, you know. That is just such a, you know, it almost gave me chills just, you know, thinking about that.
Now, it was built in 1852.
Of course, as I grew up, I did not appreciate it because I lived in this old house. You know, I wanted that brand new house up on the hill like my friends had. But, you know, you get wise and all of a sudden, you know, when you are a little older, and that there was something there.
The people we've just met here and who are looking for their ancestry are coming to Braunfels to find their ancestry here in the U.S.
Yes.
Now, did you also go a little further back to find your ancestors in Germany?
Well, we have, you know, other relatives have done that. I've got that all in written form. I'm fortunate to have a cousin on my father's side who has, you know, has done all of that. And even on my mother's side, I have relatives who have done that. So, yes, I do have that documentation.
And have you traveled to Germany to find out?
Yes.
And what was that like?
Well, I mean, I've been to Germany. I haven't. We were just there last year. We're going again this next year. We've been to Braunfels, you know, our sister city. So we have friends there who come here and back and forth. But we'll be coming back this next year in September. We'll take another trip. And so we'll look forward to that.
What about the German language here in Braunfels, New Braunfels,
well,
I should say?
Well, you know, the German here, and that's a whole new thing. Unfortunately, ich kann verstehen, bis ich kann sprechen. They say, you know, that my parents spoke German in that. They say I spoke it fluently as a child, but yet it's lost to us today. I mean, yes, my children took German in high school, but yet we don't speak it, you know, on a daily basis. So, you know, it's very unfortunate, you know, the expressions we have, like I always say, you know, he hopped on a Schnupnas, you know. And Schnupnas, it's something we've always said that means like I have a runny nose, you know.
Okay.
But, you know, it's the phrases and that, you know, have come through the generations. And, well, just like in Germany, the different dialects from each of the regions. I'm German. I'm a German Texan. I'm probably as German as you are in that sense, you know. But I just happen to be born in Texas, you know. Yes, and the difference in the Bratwurst, you know. My husband makes sausage for a living. We're in the mail order business, and yet people from Germany tell us that our Bratwurst is not like it is in Germany. Well, it shouldn't be. We're not in Germany, you know. We're in Texas. And the ingredients, you know, are different. You don't find the same types of spices. And, you know, even the animals here, whether, you know, it's wild game of venison or even how animals are fed, you know, that all plays a part in how food will taste. And so, no, our Bratwurst is not like what you might find in Germany.
Oh, dear. How can I possibly build a bridge between different tastes in Bratwurst and our next topic? I guess I shouldn't even try. We're going to talk about making your accommodation on your travels affordable, and we call this category absolutely hospitable.
Do you love meeting people from other cultures?
Do you love traveling?
Do you love helping other people?
Then this is the place for you to be.
These are the opening lines you would find on the website of Hospitality Club. It is a club through which people offer a place to sleep for travelers and through which they can find accommodation for free wherever they travel in the world. Sometimes a place to sleep means some spare place on the floor of a living room. Sometimes it means a guest room. However, the club has many other functions as well, apart from being a forum for free accommodation. You can chat with the members, read about each other's travel experiences, find people who have similar interests with you.
Of course, there are safeguards so that the system doesn't get misused. Before being accepted, every new member is checked whether he or she is really an existing person. This happens by checking the passport numbers. Since this is an organization led by volunteers, this can last a couple of days. Talking about volunteers, it is very important that in this club there is no money involved. The emphasis is on mutual help. Mutual, but not in the usual meaning. Because if you get accommodation from someone when you're traveling, probably next time you can help someone else by being a host.
We found accommodation through the club when we made a backpacking tour in Scotland with my friend. As students, we had a pretty restricted budget, so to stay even in hostels would have been difficult for us. Among the members, we found a young Canadian couple in Glasgow who offered to be our hosts. The situation got a bit tricky when it turned out that they probably have to move in another flat on the very day of our arrival. Still, they were ready to host us in whatever apartment they will be at that time. Arriving completely exhausted after the long journey, they waited us with warm dinner. The following day, they showed us around in the city, and we even went out together in the evening. It was unbelievable that they treated us like friends, although they have never seen us before. It was a very good feeling trusting and being trusted as strangers.
There are several other organizations which help travelers from different countries to get in touch with the local population. Adelheid tells us about Servas, which also involves staying in hosts' houses for free. But it is much more than this. Let us listen to her.
So Adelheid, how did you get in touch with this organization?
About 10 years ago, when my husband and I set out for a longer trip to Canada, USA, Chile, New Zealand, Australia and South Africa. We were saying goodbye to our friends when one of our friends mentioned this organization called Servas and said, why don't you get in touch with them? Because it's a good way of getting to know people. So we did get in touch. We found out that this was an organization that puts travelers and hosts in touch with each other so that when you go to a particular city, you have contact to somebody who actually lives in the city, so you can get to know life as it is in this city. You don't stay in a hotel.
But how do you get in touch with this organization at the first time?
Nowadays, you can contact your local coordinator via the internet. When we set out traveling, we were referred to somebody near where we were living. And we were invited for an interview. We had to talk about our reasons for traveling, what our approach was to foreign countries, what we were expecting from our travels. Mm-hmm. And it was quite an in-depth interview conducted by somebody who'd been, I think, everywhere. So being so new in traveling, to being new to traveling and being new to the organization, we were quite impressed by our interviewer. Mm. So then we were given a letter of introduction where we had to talk a bit about ourselves. And this is what you present to your host. And you find out your host through a guest list that you are being given by the organization. So you contact the host in the city that you're staying in and say, I'm a traveller and I would like to meet you. And they then say, oh, that's fine. Or they say, I'm sorry, I'm so busy, really not possible, etc. And the rule is that as a traveller, you're being given this list of addresses. You contact the host and they say whether it's possible or not, and you stay there for 2 nights. Mm-hmm. You stay in their home for 2 nights, not for longer and not for less. And the reason behind it is that this gives hosts and travellers enough time to communicate, to find out about each other's countries, so we can have in-depth conversations about where you come from, what it's like in your city. You can discuss the city that you happen to be in with your hosts and find out all the things that, as a normal tourist, you don't know about.
Yeah, that's right. So in some cases, you do programs together, you walk around the city together.
It very much depends on the host. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they take you on little trips and show you corners of a city or an area that you would never have found all by yourself, things that are not mentioned in any guidebook. And sometimes they just provide a nice place to come back to in the evening, where you can relax and talk about what you've experienced during the day.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other rules which members have to keep?
No, this is the beauty of this organization. The rules are very few, but they're very strict.
Okay. So what happens if you would like to stay a bit longer because you feel you're sympathetic to each other and you have a nice time?
You're not allowed to ask. Only if your host offers and says, would you like to stay a few days longer? Then that's perfect.
So this is the magic sentence.
Yeah, that's right.
Could you share with us some experiences you had during your traveling?
Yes, with pleasure. I distinctly remember the first host we had in the United States. We contacted them by phone and asked whether we could stay with them, and they said, fine, no problem. Only as it is a Saturday, I have to take the children to the football, and I don't think my husband is in. I think he's working. You know what? She said, I'll put the key in the barbecue set outside on the veranda. And I said, what? They don't know us. They've never seen us in their lives. How can they give us the key to their house? But I think this is a very good example of the spirit that this organization and the people who make the organization believe in. It's trust and sharing.
Yeah.
So we arrived, and fortunately somebody was there, so we didn't have to go and find the key in the barbecue set. And we had a wonderful time with them. They were a wonderful family, and we're still friends. I did go and see them again, and we talk over the phone, we write, and they've become very good friends of ours. I remember another time when we stayed with people in South Africa. We had very long and very intensive discussions talking about the end of apartheid. And I think we were very privileged that they let us know about their experiences in the transition before apartheid was abolished, during the time of transition, and a few years after when Mandela was actually president. And so we had an insight into the political situation and the history of South Africa that I don't think we would have had otherwise. And again, we still write, it's a really wonderful experience. We stayed with a social worker and a lorry driver in their house. And the house was directly by the sea. And we then wanted to explore an area where it was very difficult to get to by public transport. And we asked our hosts, can you tell us where we can find a cheap car rental firm? And they looked at us and said, why don't you take our car?
Oh.
We have two. So they gave us their car, and we toured the area and visited the most easterly campground in the world, the most easterly cinema in the world,
aww,
and the most easterly city in the world. We traveled for a year. We didn't stay with service hosts all the time, but wherever we could, because we found it was such a much more rewarding experience.
And are you still involved in this organization?
Yes, we're now being hosts. So we welcome travelers from all over the world who come and want to stay in Bonn. We've had a woman from New Zealand who was teaching English in Denmark and was on her way to Turkey to teach English. We had a traveller from Japan who was very interested in German wines and wanted to set up a business in Japan importing German wines. We had a Beethoven enthusiast from Paris who came specially for the Beethoven Festival to Bonn. So we're still involved, and we've also traveled with servers to the Czech Republic, etc. Mm-hmm. And again, we've met some very nice people there.
Do you feel ready to experience such things? If yes, then have a look at www.servas.org, where you can read more about this organization. Also, you can find there information about how to become a member. If you are already a member of Servers, Hospitality Club, or any similar organization, why not share your stories with all of us? You can leave a comment on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. And there you can also find the addresses of these services. I am afraid we are coming to the end of our German Texan show. Our next show will be coming to you from Denmark on the 8th of February. In a month's time, I'll return and tell you more about my stay in Texas over Christmas. And I will try to prove to you that Texas is not just a state, but a state of mind. Time to say goodbye from Texas with a song which my friend sang for us on New Year's Eve. Do I detect German yodeling there? Or is this a Texan cowgirl song? More of this curious German-Texan cocktail on this podcast next month. Until then, stay tuned!
Now I have found my cowboy sweetheart, and I have learned to rope and ride. And we've settled down in a California town out west of the Great Divide. Our two little cowgals have two kids of their own. That makes I'm still riding side by side with my cowboy sweetheart. He's a rootin' tootin' cowboy grandpa. Yolo, T-O, O-lo, T-O, Yolo, Yolo, Yolo.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tverkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.